casas de mis abuelos, vengo llamando, vengo aquí en la casa de mis abuelos, voy recordando aquí en la tiba de mis abuelos, vengo llamando, la medicina de mis abuelos, voy levantando, la medicina de mis abuelos, voy levantando.
That is Alonso del Rio from Peru with Aquí en la Casa de Mis Abuelos, here in the home of my grandparents, a song, an incantation, if you will, of remembrance of days and loved ones long gone. This is Utrice Lead on Lead Stories right here of PRN.FM. It is Thursday, October the 25th, and that song sets a tone for our discussion today, a discussion about an unholy alliance involving the Catholic Church, repressive regimes in Central and South America, and a U.S. military institution located on an army base in Fort Benning, Georgia, which our guest says has been responsible for torture, terrorism, and crimes against humanity, and which he says he's going to succeed at shutting down. Our guest is Father Roy Bourgeois, a Catholic priest of the Marinal Order and a priest activist for almost 45 years. After graduating from college, he joined the U.S. Navy and served as a lieutenant for 4 years at sea, in Europe, and in Vietnam, where he was wounded and was awarded a Purple Heart for injuries sustained in that war. He later returned the Purple Heart. He spent 5 years in Bolivia aiding the poor, but was accused of trying to overthrow the government of dictator General Hugo Banzer. He was arrested and deported back to the United States, but continued his work among the poor in the city of Chicago. Father Roy became an outspoken critic of U.S. foreign policy in Central and South America after 4 American churchwomen, a missionary, and 3 nuns were brutally beaten, raped, and killed by a death squad in El Salvador in 1980. Of the 5 soldiers charged with that crime, 3 were graduates of what was then called the School of the Americas at the U.S. Army base in Fort Benning, Georgia. After he established that there was a connection between the School of the Americas and atrocities across Central and South America committed by military personnel who had been trained at that school, Father Roy founded School of the Americas Watch in 1990 and began an aggressive effort to shut it down. Father Roy's activism has earned him numerous awards and commendations, including the Gandhi Peace Award, the Pax Christi USA Pope Paul VI Teacher of Peace Award, and a nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. And of course, there is a flip side to that coin. And on that flip side, we find that Father Roy has spent 4 years in U.S. federal prisons because of his human rights activities and continues to rattle the Vatican over its, what he calls, racist, sexist, and politically abhorrent policies, to the point that it recently sought to excommunicate him. Thank you, Father Roy, for being with us today.
It's good to be with you, Eutrice.
Well, I would like to start with the school, since that is the point of departure for our discussion today. The School of the Americas, which now has a new name as of 2001, it is called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, WINSEC for short. But tell us about this school and why it is you are so dogged in your pursuit of shutting it down.
Well, let me just say to the listeners, it took me a while to wake up to U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. I mean, it took Vietnam to turn me around and want to be a peacemaker, to become a critic for the first time of our U.S. foreign policy, especially in Vietnam. And that became a turning point. It was in Vietnam that I felt I was being called as a Catholic to the priesthood. And being a male, I was able to pursue my vocation to the priesthood, and I was later ordained a Catholic priest and went to serve the poor in Bolivia, where this slum, this barrio on the outskirts of La Paz, became my home for the next 5 years. And really it was here that I was introduced to U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. Put simply, we were on the wrong side. We were supporting a brutal dictator in Bolivia, General Pinochet nearby in Chile, the thugs throughout Central America, and we were simply on the wrong side. We were defending a socioeconomic system that kept a very small elite in power and who had the military on their side to keep them in power and to protect their wealth and their large land holdings. And I was kicked out of Bolivia in my fifth year and became very involved in El Salvador. You mentioned the four church women. Two of them were good friends of mine. These three nuns and a Catholic lay worker were raped and killed by the Salvadoran military. That really brought many of us to El Salvador. And what we found once again was our country, the United States, giving guns and training to those doing the killing. They were at war with their people, the poor, who make up the vast majority of the population. But it was after that happened, that was 1980. In 1989, there were six Catholic priests of the Jesuit order speaking out against what was going on in El Salvador, and like the churchwomen and Bishop Oscar Romero, also assassinated in 1980, were told to be quiet, to leave the country. They could not leave. They continued to speak truth to power. And these six Jesuits, along with a young mother, their co-worker Elba, and her 15-year-old daughter Selena, they were massacred. And this made the front pages of newspapers around the world. These Jesuits here in the United States, you know, they run 28 colleges like Marquette and Georgetown, Loyola, and many others. Members of Congress, some of them who knew the Jesuits, educated at their colleges and high schools in the U.S., were furious. They sent a congressional task force to El Salvador to investigate and return reporting that those who were responsible for this massacre of the six Jesuits and the two women were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. That's when I and a group of 10 of us, came to Fort Benning to investigate this U.S. Army School of the Americas. And what we found, Eutrice, was really a school of assassins, as it was known throughout Latin America. It was here that we had trained. That was in 1990 when we started to do our research. Over 50,000 soldiers from 18 different countries. They came here to learn commando tactics, counterinsurgency techniques, which is the major course there. We asked who were the insurgents, and what we discovered in these countries throughout Central America, especially in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and throughout South America, the insurgents were who they've always been, the campesinos, the landless farmers, who are paid a dollar a day to work the land, who see their children go to bed hungry at night, who simply cannot survive. And they are the targets, those who call for a living wage, for land reform. They are the spiritual leaders, like the four church women, Bishop Romero, the Jesuits. They are labor leaders, especially in Colombia, where most of the soldiers are being trained from today, Colombia. They are the healthcare workers. They are the university students who become critics of U.S. foreign policy and their country's dictators and leaders. And so what we found here really was a school, all paid for by the U.S. taxpayers, about $30 million a year. And this school whose graduates returned to their home countries after training here in our backyard at Fort Benning, Georgia, they would cause untold suffering and death to their people. And let me just say that we put the word out, started a national office in Washington, D.C., started our website, SOAW.org, and we put the word out, let us gather here every November around the anniversary of the massacre of the six Jesuit priests and these two women, their co-workers, and let us keep their memories alive. Let us call for the closing of this school. Let us remember the many victims, Bishop Romero, the church women, and the tens of thousands of landless farmers and university students, labor leaders, and others who are on the receiving end of U.S. foreign policy, who are being killed by soldiers that we are training with our tax money. It's being done in our name. And I'm happy to report that our movement, while beginning with 10 of us, you know, three of us were Vietnam vets, Charlie Litke from California, recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor, a Jesuit priest, two Dominicans, three Salvadoran university students who had to leave El Salvador with death threats, Kathy Kelly, a well-known peace activist doing a lot today on Pakistan and Afghanistan and the whole issue of the drones, the drone warfare. But we started with a very small group, 10 of us, and started calling attention to this school of assassins in our backyard. And I'm happy to report, as we prepare for our annual vigil at the main gate of Fort Benning, November the 16th, 17th, and 18th, we will have thousands coming here from around the country. Most will be university students. I'm happy to say that about 10 years ago, our movement began to draw a lot of students, especially college and university students. And we have a lot of veterans, a lot of nuns, the religious women. The very first organization in the early days to pass a resolution calling for the closing of the school was the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the nuns, who are now being attacked by the Vatican for their commitment to peace and justice and equality. But these nuns, representing over 80,000 nuns in the U.S., passed that first resolution, and that was followed by the NAACP, many, many other organizations, Amnesty International called for its closure, and many church groups, faith groups. And I'm happy to say that we're filled with hope. I do believe that before long, we will get this school shut down.
Four attempts so far have been made to shut it down in 1993, in 94, in 97, and in 98. The House voted in 99 to cut funding, but that bid also went south. Where is this fight now, legislatively? Where does it stand?
Well, we have a bill in Congress, H.R. 3368. Our allies in Congress would be Representative John Lewis from Georgia, well-known civil rights leader, Jim McGovern from Massachusetts, and many others, mostly Democrats. However, we have quite a few Republicans coming on board in light of the economy and the budget cuts. Many for the first time are saying what many of us are saying in the movement. You know, this $30 million that we are pumping into this school from our taxes to train these thugs from Latin America that's causing so much violence and oppression to their people, this is a theft to the schools for our children. I mean, I live right outside of the main gate of Fort Benning, right here in Georgia. I mean, there are serious budget cuts to schools. Teachers are being laid off. Classes are becoming much larger in size. Programs like tutoring programs for the students that are really struggling in school, those budgets are being cut. This is a scandal. But I'm happy to say, too, just a little brief history here. What led to the name change of the school, we really, I mean, put the word out, let us gather here in the name of peace, in the name of solidarity, every November. And thousands would come. You know, we began with 10, and then 1,000 came, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 would gather. And then in the spring, we would head to Washington to lobby. We realized that we needed Congress to cut off the funding to this school. And we kept going every spring, and the numbers, each time they would vote, would close. We came within 10 votes of shutting it down. And what happened, this issue became a public relations nightmare for the Pentagon. We had major newspapers in the late 90s calling for its closure. I've got here the Washington Post, the editorial lead line in large print, School of Scandal. The New York Times, this is 1999, School of the Dictators. The Boston Globe, School of the Assassins, Detroit Free Press, Torture University. And then what really got the school in big trouble, Utrice, was the front page article on the torture manuals. It was discovered that in the curriculum at the School of the Americas, there were these manuals that advocated torture. So here's the front page of the Washington Post, bold print, U.S. instructed Latins on executions and torture. Manuals used from 1982 through 91, Pentagon reveals. Well, that extensive article really was the final blow for the school, and members of Congress simply said to the Pentagon they could not support anything with the School of the Americas name attached to it. So that's when in 2001, they came up with a plan to change the name of the school, which was now called by a very close vote in Congress. The school's name was changed to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, WINSEC. Now, for us, it's a new name, but the same shame. It's like putting, I think, you know, on a bottle of poison, a label that says penicillin. This school is still deadly. This school is still about men with guns. This school is still about providing the muscle in these countries, especially in Central America, parts of South America, to protect U.S. economic interest. This is all about, this is not a very complicated issue. For many decades, our country, the United States, went into these countries to exploit the cheap labor and the vast natural resources in these sweatshops that we visited recently in Juarez, in places in El Salvador, Guatemala, throughout many of these countries. You can pay a worker $1 or $2 a day. $5 a day in the sweatshops in Mexico. And of course, there are huge profits to be made from this cheap labor. And for that system to keep operating, let me just say, if we lived, we here in the United States, under the conditions of those who are on the receiving end of our country's foreign policy and the cheap labor that we insure over there, and exploiting that cheap labor, we would do what these brothers and sisters are doing in these countries, these families. We would speak out for a living wage. We would speak out for schools for our children, for medicines to be healed with. We would speak out for food for our children. And when they do, I must say, the response is very harsh and swift. They present a threat to those in power and to U.S. economic interest, and many, as in Bolivia, for example, El Salvador, many are killed, disappeared, tortured, and silenced. But today, many of us are discovering our voice. And like Bishop Oscar Romero said, you know, we all have a voice, and it's very important that we use our voices for those whose voices have been taken away and who are on the receiving end of our country's foreign policy. It's all about solidarity.
You're listening to Father Roy Bourgeois the founder of School of the Americas Watch. And we're discussing this unholy alliance. One point I wanted to make, wanted to ask you to address is, you are proceeding, or you're trying to get the White House, since several efforts at the congressional level have not been fruitful. You're now going directly to the source. Tell us about that.
Yes, we will be meeting. It's been confirmed, not the date, but it definitely will happen within the next couple of months. A meeting with the deputy foreign affairs advisor to President Obama. We have been trying to get this meeting for some time, for the last year, and finally it's going to happen. We've been assured of this from a call from the White House. At that meeting will be labor leaders, probably Bob King, the president of the United Auto Workers. We're going to have a nun with us representing the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. We're going to have a couple of survivors of torture, one from Argentina, one from Guatemala, perhaps one from El Salvador. We're going to have members, of course, of the SOA Watch movement, someone representing the large student network in our movement, and others. And what we want to say to President Obama, and whoever will be in the White House after the election, simply is that this really is a no-lose situation. Shutting down the School of the Americas is very important. There are so many groups here in the United States for years who have been calling for its closure. And in Latin America, I must say, we have traveled to 15 countries over just the last few years, delegations representing our large grassroots movement, the SOA Watch. And in Latin America, wherever we go, we see a sea change taking place, especially in countries like Argentina and Uruguay and Brazil, Ecuador and Venezuela, and a few other countries. There's a sea change taking place. Many of these countries are electing leaders that are much closer to the poor and who are trying very hard to improve the quality of life of the poor of their countries, who make up the majority of the people. And what they are saying to us in our meetings is that we, the United States, you know, as a country, we are welcome. Pero no como antes, not as before. Not as the conquistadors who came in, you know, many years ago to exploit the cheap labor and their resources. If we, the United States, can go into their country today as an ally, as a partner in their development to improve the quality of life for their people, where most of them really live in poverty and struggle for survival. If we want to work with them to improve the quality of life of these people, bienvenidos, we are welcome. And that's the question. Are we capable as a country with a long history of exploiting other people and their cheap labor and resources? Can we go in as an equal with a horizontal relationship rather than as a conquistador? I hope we can. I want to believe that we can. And so this meeting is really to remind, you know, a top-ranking advisor to the next president that in Latin America, this School of the Americas, now called WINSEC, is a symbol of U.S. foreign policy in their country. It's well known as a school for dictators, as a school of assassins, as a school of torture. And by closing it, really, we can begin a new relationship with these countries of Latin America. I want to say we have been very disappointed in President Obama. When he came into the White House, you know, we really thought that he, unlike President Bush, I mean, would put Latin America, you know, on the radar screen and would change our relationship with these countries. But it just didn't happen. And so we're hopeful, and what gives us great hope now and a lot going for us, and they know this at the White House, I'm happy to report that six countries have pulled their troops out of the school. We have met with a number of their presidents over the last few years, have gone, like I said, to 15 different countries. The first country to pull out was Argentina, and then Venezuela, Uruguay, and Bolivia. It was a special joy for me to go back to Bolivia after many years, after being kicked out there by the dictatorship years ago, but to meet with the new president, President Evo Morales, in a country, Bolivia, where the vast majority are indigenous, the first ever indigenous president. And I'm happy to say that 3 weeks after our meeting with him, he made a decision to pull the troops out. And just this year, just 4 months ago now, we went to Ecuador, where we met with President Rafael Correa. And at our meeting in the Palacio there, with a lot of press, lots of cameras, and a lot of newspapers represented, he made the announcement that Ecuador is pulling out of this school. In his words, this school should not exist. And that was country number five. And just 3 weeks ago, we were in Nicaragua, where our delegation met with President Daniel Ortega. And let me just, I've got, at that meeting, President Ortega made the announcement that, I have the quote right here, I think it's important to quote him. He said that all of the countries of Latin America, this is from President Daniel Ortega now just 3 weeks ago as we met with him in Nicaragua, all of the countries of Latin America have been victims of graduates of this school. The SOA, School of the Americas, is a symbol of death, a symbol of power and terror. We have been gradually reducing our numbers of troops at the SOA. We have now entered a new phase and will not continue to send troops to the SOA. This is the least that we can do. We have been the victims of this school. End of quote. And that now is country number six. And I just want to say, Patrice, and to our listeners, that really for us was a home run for our movement, a grand slam. I mean, to get a country to pull out its troops has been a challenge. But today we now have into this year, but we have a total of six countries that have pulled out. And our movement is now energized. It's filled with a lot more hope. And the way we see it, I mean, we're going to be going to other countries soon, to Brazil, Peru, and meeting with some of these presidents and defense ministers, university leaders and labor leaders with a request, pull your troops out. And the way we see it, a school without students simply must close. It can't operate. And like President Correa said in Ecuador, for us, this school should not exist. So we're not going away. We're keeping our hands on the plow. The big gathering of thousands, you know, in 3 weeks, November the 16th through the 18th at the main gate of Fort Benning, always energizes our movement. And I invite our listeners perhaps to join us here, really, to come for the first time, to learn more about this issue by simply going to our website again, www.soaw.org.
I want to ask now about a subject that is very close to your heart, and it's about the church to which you belong, the Catholic Church. You say it has blood on its hands for aiding and abetting repressive regimes in Central and South America that have committed and still are committing crimes against humanity. You call them bullies in the Vatican, and you say they are targeting and intimidating priests and lay workers whose humanitarian work is deemed to be liberation theology that threatens the power of the state. You stand by that statement?
I certainly do, and it saddens me as a Catholic priest for 40 years now to really use the words that I use, strong words, you know, that our church leaders have blood on their hands, that we have cause really in Latin America, like the School of the Americas, my church, that institution, the Catholic Church, has caused untold suffering and death throughout the Americas. First, let me say a motto for me as a church leader would be Archbishop Oscar Romero, who was your typical bishop, really. He was very, the reason he was made bishop in El Salvador was because he was a company man. When the very powerful elite who owned, you know, most of the land in El Salvador, when he was made bishop, the large landowners, those who ran the country, the most powerful in the country, said, we've got an ally here. He's not going to give us problems. Little did they know. Bishop Oscar Romero had a heart filled with compassion and love for the poor. And what happened was when he began to see up close the suffering of his people in a well-known Jesuit there, Rutilio Grande, who was a very close friend of Bishop Romero, when he was assassinated for his work with the poor, Bishop Romero really began to speak a different language. He broke his silence. And what he said was very clear. He said, I am a bishop in the Catholic Church. I have a lot of power. I have a voice. And I must use my voice for my people whose voices have been taken away, who are silenced. And he spoke very clearly and boldly. And he got death threats. And his friend said, Oscar, you've got to leave El Salvador. But he said, I cannot. These are my people. I'm a bishop. I have a responsibility to speak out for them. And as a result, when he was saying Mass, March the 24th, 1980, he was assassinated. And just the day before his assassination, he made a special plea to the military in his country. He said, stop the killing. Lay down your weapons. Disobey your superior officers, telling you to kill your fellow campesinos, the landless farmers, and obey a higher law, that law of God that says, thou shalt not kill. Bishop Oscar Romero was indeed a prophet. He was a martyr of the faith, a great lover of the poor. And the next day he was killed, and of course he said, you can kill me, but my voice will live on in the pueblo, in the lives of the people, and how true it is. He has touched the lives of thousands, just countless numbers of people in his country, and many people, including myself, outside of El Salvador. And for me and many of us, he's a model bishop. Now, when I was in Bolivia, and, of course, in El Salvador and Guatemala and most countries, the bishops who were in these countries appointed by the Vatican were not the Bishop Romero's. I'm sad to say that the majority of the bishops in El Salvador were not like Bishop Oscar Romero, nor were they like him in Guatemala, Bolivia, Chile. Most of them were really on the side of the military. They wined and dined. They were on the side of that economic elite who ran the country. And what really educated me about my church was when I lived in this slum of Bolivia for 5 years under a brutal dictator, General Hugo Banzer, that we, of course, supported, kept in power. Most of the bishops in Bolivia, as in nearby Chile, with few exceptions, and in other countries, all supported their dictators. They were on the wrong side, as was the U.S., our country, our State Department, our Pentagon, our White House. We were not allied with the poor, but with the wealthy who exploited them. And something very important, perhaps some of our listeners have heard about how liberation theology in Latin America that began to really blossom and take root after Vatican II, some 50 years ago, after the Second Vatican Council that took place in Rome, where Pope John the 23rd said, we have to update our church, bring it into the present. And what came out of that Vatican II was that, you know, we are the church, that we want a more circular model of church and getting away from that very top-down model and hierarchical, patriarchal model. But I'm sad to say, while there was great hope after Vatican II and liberation theology came out as a result of Vatican II, which basically said to the poor, we want to empower you to speak, where out of liberation theology came that all-important word, solidaridad, solidarity, which simply means to accompany, to walk with, to make the struggle of others, especially the poor, the oppressed, those who are discriminated against, you know, your struggle. And the church said, we want to walk with you in solidarity, and they want to empower you, like Bishop Romero, to break your silence. And bishops should speak for the poor, who are often voiceless. But simply put, it just didn't happen. Most bishops were corrupt, as our Vatican. It hurts me to say this, but there is a lot of corruption beginning with the Vatican in this old boys club. Our church today is dominated by mostly, you know, white men, and they are very privileged. Most of them have never lived with the poor. They might make a quick trip to visit the poor, make a speech or two, but they return to their mansions. They return to Rome, to the Vatican. And it's sad to see that they are so distant from the poor. And when it came to liberation theology, what was very, very sad and disappointing, when Pope John Paul II, who was our pope for many years, would go to Latin America, he did not support liberation theology. And I think what was going on here was that Pope John Paul and the present Pope, Pope Benedict, would see liberation theology as a threat to their power. A church that has been dominated for centuries by men who claim that they are the owners of the church, that God only speaks through men, that somehow only men can interpret the scriptures and know the will of God. This, I must say, is heresy. God speaks through all, through everyone, people of every culture and race and gender. And this is the basic problem today, is that more people today, not only Catholics but in the world, are more educated, and they refuse to be silenced. And I'm happy to say, though, that liberation theology is not dead. Our church leaders at the Vatican have caused a lot of harm and suffering through our very colonial theology that we have taught for many years. By not supporting liberation theology, we withheld our support of the poor and empowering them to speak.
But why do you stay within the church structure? Why are you still a priest? I know that recently they had other plans for you. The plan was to excommunicate you. But why are you still within a structure that you readily admit has blood on its hands and is corrupt?
Let me just say, as a Catholic priest years ago, I felt compelled and came very close to simply leaving, resigning over some of the church's teachings, the first being the church's teaching against on simply teaching that only men can be ordained. We are all created, men and women. We are all created of equal worth and dignity in the image and likeness of God. This is what we profess. And what we say in our teaching, that somehow women are not worthy to be priests. And this teaching cannot stand up to scrutiny. So I broke my silence on that issue and began to talk about gender equality, that men and women are indeed equal, and God calls both men and women to the priesthood, which got me in big trouble with the Vatican, who insisted that I recant my support and belief that women should be ordained, which I refused to do. Today I remain a priest, but I must say I'm not sure what's going to happen in the future, because I will not be silenced. I will continue to follow my conscience, as so many do. Conscience is very sacred. We always talked in the Catholic Church about the primacy of conscience, how it's our lifeline to God, that our conscience really urges always for us to do the right thing. And I simply will not recant my belief that men and women are created equally. And the other issue that has caused me to consider leaving the church is the cruelty of our language when it comes to one's sexual orientation. The church's teaching on homosexuality, I must say, has caused a lot of suffering, has led to suicides among our youth. And our church's teaching has nothing to do with God, a loving God, who made us all of equal worth and dignity, where every life is precious, where this loving Creator loves everyone, no matter of their gender, their race, or their sexual orientation. We are all of equal worth and dignity. And this loving God, this loving Creator, loves everyone unconditionally. But what we have here is an institution, the Catholic Church, that's dominated, that's ruled by men. And while we say that we are created in the image and likeness of God, what they say, what's going on here, is that they make God in their image, a very, I think, male God, a God who does not accept everyone equally. And I'm filled with a lot of hope, but let me just say about your question, why don't I leave? I made a decision not to leave. So many of my friends have left the Catholic Church, especially women friends, who simply said, I couldn't take it anymore. Or our gay lesbian brothers and sisters who simply couldn't take the pain anymore, the offensive language, being made to feel that they were not welcome in the church. And so they have left, but I and many others have decided to stay. And for me, what it comes down to is I never did like bullies. I didn't like them in high school. I didn't like them in college. I didn't like them in Bolivia or in El Salvador. No one likes a bully. They abuse their power. And if you allow bullies to simply keep doing what they're doing and not confront them and simply walk away, they will continue to do what they're doing. They hurt people. They abuse their power. And I and many refuse to leave the church. I feel this is our church, and I want to stay in as a Catholic priest to reform it. And a lot of women who are called to the priesthood have joined other churches, like the Episcopal Church, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, where they can pursue their call. But I also have women friends who are called to the priesthood who say, no, I'm Catholic. I'm not leaving the church. I will stay in and really work and struggle and fight for reform. This is our church. And that's where I am today. I'm happy. I'm really glad that I didn't a few years ago, as I was really thinking of leaving, not to leave. I'm not leaving. This is our church. And let me just say, too, in closing, I'm filled with hope, because this issue of equality, of justice, cannot be stopped. There were many, I know, in my church and other faith communities who tried to stop the abolition of slavery. They couldn't do it. There were many who tried to stop the women's suffrage movement. And sad to say, in my church, there were cardinals and bishops who tried to stop the right of women to vote. They failed. And there were many who tried to stop the civil rights movement in the United States. They could not stop it. And there are many who are trying to stop you know, the gay movement, the same-sex marriage movement, and of course the right of women to be ordained. And these movements are unstoppable simply because these movements are rooted in love and justice and equality. And I'm filled with hope because, again, these movements are inevitable. But I do say we have a lot of work ahead of us, a lot of struggle, a lot of work. But I do believe that soon we are going to close the School of Assassins at Fort Benning, and we are going to ordain women. And there will be soon same-sex marriage that's going to gain more and more momentum and become acceptable. The polls are all showing that people are getting on the right side of history, that they believe in equality and in justice and in love.
Well, Father Bourgeois, thank you so much. This has been an extraordinary visit with you today, and I want to thank you for being our tour guide through this very troublesome issue and wish you the best of luck. Could you remind people how to connect with SOA Watch?
Yes, very important. For more information, and we've got a lot of good resources that you can also get. Our website is www.soaw.org. And the youth and our women just came out with an excellent documentary. It's called Sumus Una America, We Are One America. And there are other documentaries available too. School of Assassins, narrated by Susan Sarandon a few years ago. That really became our big documentary that educated so many. And that documentary, School of Assassins, was nominated for an Oscar, which really helped the cause. And there are other DVDs, documentaries, and books that are available. And in closing, like Bishop Romero did say, you know, in this struggle for peace, justice, and equality, we can all do something, and we can do it well. And I just invite our listeners to be a part of these movements and to use our voice to advance the cause. And again, I think it's all about solidarity.
I thank you for today, Father Bourgeois. Thank you so much for being with us.
Goodbye, you chief. She gave me a lot of hope. Goodbye.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. Of course, I would be inviting Father Bourgeois back to give us an update on how this struggle is going. But I want to thank you. You can always reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you're thinking about this program today. I hope you enjoyed it. Tomorrow, it's Free for All Friday. It's a big open forum, so get ready. Thanks so much for listening. It's a pleasure being in your company.